Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read. It was a madhouse in here without you, Hucky said, ripping free from where Melinda held him with her back to the wall. She looked at Adar with wide eyes, afraid of what he would do next. Was it because she feared he thought she was complicit with Helda, or because he knew the truth about her allegiance to the Copal and the Hunway? It is time to get out of here, Adar said. He looked at Helda as he made his way over to Lars and took him from the woman holding the boy. I am in a forgiving mood, he said. Cross me again, see what happens. And now, Chapter 28. The morning light blinded Soray as it reflected off the still pool outside of the arch, causing her to stumble as she stepped out onto the small grassy knoll. She pushed a hand to the side and clawed at the air as she toppled over. Luckily, she was able to twist so she could avoid landing on a large boulder that would have at least bruised a rib, if not worse. She landed with an oomph and, to her satisfaction, managed to avoid crying out. It was difficult to make less sound than that as her forearm had struck a small rock. It stung, but she was going to shrug it off if she could. The ground had little in the way of vegetation or grass that broke her fall, but it was a great deal more forgiving than the boulder would have been. She felt a little foolish when she realized Jorad had just said something to her about needing to watch her step when coming out of the arch. He was several steps ahead of her but had not turned. He seemed to be focused on looking around. There was that to be grateful for, she supposed. It wasn't going to be easy to increase his esteem of her, but at least he hadn't witnessed yet another action that would further cement his need to protect and care for her. She was doubly glad now she had not cried out. But that doesn't mean I need to do everything the hard way, she thought as she ground her teeth. Even though I'm trying to be more independent, I still must heed well-meaning advice, regardless of the source. It's my own stupid fault for not listening. Perhaps it had been her subconscious that had caused her to tune out Jorad, or maybe she had just become too distracted by her own thoughts again. Either way, she had to pay better attention to what was going on around her. Zarda might be able to give her a few pointers on that. Snickering came from behind as she righted herself into a sitting position. She avoided looking back to see who was laughing, but it sounded like it was either Liron or Wes. It grated on her, but she would overcome. With time. She sighed. It wasn't even that bad. Everybody lost control and fell at some point or another. She was just frustrated at the way everybody already treated her. To them, she was somebody that either needed protection or scolding. In some cases, derision. She didn't know how long it would take to make others see her differently, but she was now trying to change things. That was a start. It would be hard to be patient while she progressed, but she hoped to avoid the misstep of lashing out at people that treated her as though she was daft or soft. That would do nothing but confirm their already low opinion of her. Here, Ter held out a hand. We all take a spill at one time or another. If the older man found Soray's stumble funny, he did not let it touch his face or even his eyes. Soray took the proffered hand and was not surprised to feel his skin was calloused and rough. If the offer had come from Jorad, Karn, or even Zarda, Soray might have insisted on getting to her feet under her own power. But she needed to make a connection with Ter, and letting him help her would be a start. Thanks, she said, once she was on her feet again. Up ahead, Jorad looked as though he was going to head back to her but had stopped. A look of concern crossed his face, but there was something else there as well. Was it hesitation? Jorad had distanced himself from her as much as she had put space between them. It might not be obvious to any of the others, but it was clear as a bell to her. What wasn't so clear was whether it was in response to how she felt about him. She hadn't done a good job of covering her emotions yesterday. Neither of them had spoken much as the night had passed. Initially, Soray had considered sitting away from him, but the way he'd been adamant about getting the arch open had made her reconsider. She joined Jorad at his spot on the floor. The night was now a blur, but she remembered him trying multiple times to get the arch to open. He had barely slept, much to the consternation of Zarda. It seemed he stood at the arch for half the night, continually swiping at it with his thumb as if it would open by a sheer number of attempts. When it was obvious that it was no longer working, nobody had ventured to discourage him, though Zarda looked several times if she might be considering it. Each time she had looked away, muttering something that Sora had not been able to make out. Eventually, Jorad had given up and tried to get some rest in the early hours of the morning. Jorad, Zarda, and Karn had discussed using the other arch that was less than a day's journey from Zekirani to make the trip back. Sora had perked up when she'd overheard them. At first, it had sounded as though Jorad was going to do just that. But the longer they talked, the more convinced Jorad had become it would be best to push forward to Rarban. Zarda had been supportive of the decision, and even Karn had come around to it as well. When they had decided to press on to Rarban, Soray had bit her lip and kept the tears from coming again. Luckily, she had already cried herself out, so it was an easy thing to do. That was another moment she could take solace in. She was getting better, but it would take a lot more time before she approached Zarda's sense of confidence or self-control. "I've taken a few steps," she thought. "All I have to do is not stop." In retrospect, now Sora had the full light of day to help push away some of her fears, she realized Zarda had subtly guided Jorad to that conclusion. Zarda had not done much, but at key points in the conversation, she had mentioned that Adar's primary concern was getting Jorad to Rarban. She had brought up how Adar was more than capable of handling himself. The final piece had been a reminder that Adar had only planned to see Jorad get to Rarban. He had never expressed any intention of returning himself. It had been Jorad's own suggestion that they move on to Rarban. He had also expressed his belief the Hanwë had somehow disabled the mechanism behind the arch. Nobody ventured to say it, but Sora assumed he meant the Hanwë had found a way to destroy it. She thought of the old wall with the arch where she'd boiled the water and wondered what a blast would do to it. She'd seen a blast go straight through the brick walls of a home without stopping. If a bunch of Hanwë had lined up with their blasters, they might have destroyed the rock where the arch was located. Jorad gave her a look of sympathy but did not come any closer. She had not yet forgiven him for what he had done, but part of her recognized if Jorad had not defended himself against Garou and Thon, it would have been Jorad who had died instead. She wanted to hate Jorad, but she was afraid she did not have the luxury. Even though she was trying to change things about herself, if she was brutally honest, she had to recognize she wasn't in a good position to look after herself. Sora suppressed a growl when she noticed Jorad was still looking at her, his jaw working as if he were trying to think of something to say. "Well," she thought, "he can't think me any weaker than he already does." She would change the way he saw her, though the Hanwë might have left before that happened, or destroyed us all. What a fine irony that would be. She finally established her independence only to die at the hands of the Hanwë. Once she was on her feet, Ter nodded and continued on his way. His hand went to his pocket. Sora looked away, hoping to not call attention to Ter's behavior. If he kept that up, it was a matter of time before the others noticed as well. If she were going to use the information to her advantage, she would need to act on it soon. Yesterday, the others had been more concerned about taking care of Jorad, but that was not the case today. They would notice Ter's odd behavior. What were the chances Ter had managed to get the tablet that Adar had been seeking? Considering the fact that Adar was conspicuously missing, she figured the odds were pretty high. Should she try to spy on Ter when he thought nobody was watching? The way he kept feeling whatever he had in his pocket made her suspect Ter would be taking it out to look at it when there wasn't anybody around to watch. She didn't know much about the tablet, but she had overheard that it had been kept in a vault at the Zekirani Town Hall. Maybe it was valuable, and Ter was fawning over it the way a woman might a necklace. The thought of creeping up on him made her heart rate increase. Moisture formed on the palm of her hands. If she did discover Ter had the tablet, what would she do then? If she told Jorad, it might help him see her as something more than a helpless girl that needed protecting. It might be a shift of having him view her as a woman that brought something to the table. The idea had merit, and she was thinking she might just do it, when she realized Jorad would assume that Ter had killed Adar when he learned Ter had possession of the tablet. Ter's coat had several minor cuts along the back. Had there been a fight between Adar and Ter? Jorad had not broached the topic with Ter, and neither had anybody else. The first time she'd seen Ter, he had been fighting with Adar. Jorad had recklessly thrown himself into the fight. It was only in quiet discussions afterward that she had learned Ter had tried not to harm Jorad because he was Abel's grandson and had specifically sent Ter in search of Jorad. If Ter had killed Adar, would that still hold true? She had been surprised at how well Jorad had managed himself during the fight with Ter. She suspected that even if Jorad were a little better with the sword, the advantage would go to Ter. Particularly if Ter had been able to kill Adar. Jorad and Ter exchanged glances as Ter passed by to the side. Both men kept a wary eye on the other and a healthy distance in between. Jorad's hand twitched as if he were going to reach for the hilt of his sword that peeked up over his back, but it hadn't made it any further than that. His eyes also narrowed, but it might have just been her imagination. She didn't have a good view of his face. Soray looked over her shoulder and spotted Karn and Zarda walking close beside one another, locked in quiet conversation. When Soray had stumbled on the fact that the relationship had formed between the two of them, she had thought Zarda would be the one making most of their decisions. After seeing an angry Karn yesterday, she was not so sure. Zarda could be emphatic about pushing to get her way, similar to the way that she'd handled Jorad. Karn's quiet manner might be the more effective of the two. Any idiot could shoot off her mouth, not that Zarda was anything close to that, but remaining patient and calm had a place as well, particularly when a woman chooses her moments of heady action well. Soray guessed Zarda believed she won more of her arguments than not. But over time, Soray had no doubt Karn would win his fair share as well. It was strange the things that brought people together, and it was even stranger how they sometimes ended up complimenting each other. 2 days ago, Soray would have said that she just couldn't envision a future without Jorad in it. But the events of the last day had made that less certain. The madness of the night before had given her precious little clarity. Given the circumstances, she wasn't certain how she would have wanted Jorad to handle things differently. The more she thought about it, she wished she had been more aware of what was going on around them during the Hunwe evasion of Zekirani. She could have prepared Jorad for the possibility of an attack coming from her father's companion if she had thought to ask Bark if anybody else was with him from Nebron. They could have been on the lookout for Garu, Thon, and Arrow, and the others. She wanted to believe if that had been the situation, Jorad would not have been so quick to turn his blaster on another human being. But it's not my responsibility to keep him from being a fool, now is it? She thought. The thoughts continued to swirl around her mind as she crossed the grassy knoll and discovered they were high up in the mountains. At one point, Jorad waited for her to catch up, and they walked in silence for a few minutes. She hated to admit it, but it did feel good to have him close by. If it had not been for everything that had happened, she would have had no doubt drawn closer to him. He may have ended a couple of lives yesterday, but he had also managed to save hundreds. It was not fair to him that didn't balance out what he had done. "Your father may have survived," Jorad said while touching his shoulder. A panicked look crossed his face and he yanked his hand down as if trying to avoid giving her the reminder about what her father had done. He looked away, twitching his neck back and forth. "It really is a shame that things worked out how they did," Soray thought. "His concern for my dad appears sincere." "Yeah," she said, "maybe." Whenever she had thought about Bark last night, it had been a struggle to avoid the tears. They'd often come before she had a chance to stop them. She had done her best to suffer in silence, but she was afraid Jorad had noticed. "Adar's still there," Jorad said softly. "Ter said he was alive when they separated. The Hunwe aren't going to kill him. Maybe he'll meet up with Bark. If they do, Adar will keep him safe." Soray was not so sure. She had hoped her father had enough time to settle down first. He wouldn't be brash enough to attack Adar as well, would he? The thought made her uncomfortable and sad. Ter walked ahead of them, still touching whatever he had hidden in his pocket. She hadn't witnessed a conversation between Ter and Jorad, but she'd dozed off several times. She was all of a sudden concerned. She had assumed Jorad didn't know or have his own suspicions, but she might be wrong. It would be frustrating if her plan didn't work out. She forced a smile. "Let's hope so," she said. "Did Ter say anything about the tablet?" "They couldn't find it," Jorad said. Saray relaxed. Nothing in his demeanor made him look as though he was suspicious of Ter. "So our only option is the Rarbon portal," she said. "Are you sure about making a claim?" To Saray's surprise, Jorad did not respond right away. She had assumed that after everything he'd been through, there wasn't much of an option. "Do you see it?" Zarda asked. She was ahead of them and had walked up a small incline. Saray went ahead while Jorad trailed behind. When she got to where Zarda stood, she noticed the gap in the trees. It wasn't apparent to Saray what it was that Zarda was pointing out. Through the gap, she could see a large expanse of ground that went on for miles and miles. And while there were some patches of forest, most of it appeared to be brush and long grass. A small mountain was miles away, but other than that, there was nothing else to see. "The mountain?" Saray asked, wondering if she had missed something. Laughter escaped from Zarda's mouth, but she cut it off as she took in the refugees. It sounded foreign to Saray, and she found herself bristling. How could Zarda be jovial at a time like this? If Zarda hadn't stopped it short, Saray might have said something about it. As it was, Saray let it go and tried not to let it get to her. "I will need her help," Saray thought. "I won't get that if I offend her." "We are less than 2 days from Rarbon," Zarda said. "Wes may be right. Those arches might just be magical." That mountain was Rarbon? Not only was it the largest city she had ever seen, there was also still a part of her that had not accepted what the arches could do. It should have taken them a couple of months to travel to Rarbon. They had covered the distance with nothing more than a few steps. She wasn't certain why she was so surprised. She'd been in and out of the arches several times yesterday. She supposed it hadn't sunk in until now. Zarda pushed ahead while Jorad stopped to stare at the city, looking as though he saw a ghost. She wondered what it would look like for him to return to the place where he had grown up. If she remembered correctly, he and Adar had fled Rarbon when Jorad had been 5 or 6. After staring for a few minutes, they continued on. "You never answered my question," Saray said once she'd given it enough time that she figured Jorad had forgotten about it. "I will see this through to the end," he said. Something in the way he said it made Saray believe he meant his death, not the destruction of the Hunway. She realized that that was the most practical, though depressing, view of the situation that he could take. They were far more likely to be killed by the Hunway. "Do you think we'll live through this?" Saray asked as she stepped closer. Right as she moved, she wished that she had not. She did not move away, though. It felt good to be close beside him. For a moment, she forgot about everything else and remembered what it had been like to dance with him. She forced the thought away, worried that he would try to take her hand or put his arm around her. When he didn't do that, she relaxed. She wasn't ready for any of that, if she ever would be again. "I hope so," Jorad said, a confident smile plastered on his face. The last time she'd seen that smile had been at the festival. It felt good to see it, but it also came with another reminder of how she had felt about him before everything had happened. She stepped away and let him go further ahead, still afraid he might try to take her hand. She followed after. When Jorad passed by Ter a few minutes later, the air around the two seemed to get colder. Ter put his hand in the pocket of his coat right after Jorad passed, and for a brief instant, Saray caught a glimpse of something shiny and flat. "Glad to see somebody smiling," Wes said from beside her, his voice low and conspiratorial. "This crowd is way too somber." Saray wiped away the grin, wishing she had been more careful. "Can you blame them?" she asked. "They just lost their homes and they're heading into an unknown land." Wes rolled his eyes as he looked away. She found her eyes drawn to Ter's pocket again. It hadn't just been her imagination. Ter had the tablet. A chill swept over her. It was one thing to suspect, quite another to know. It had been easy to make a plan when all she had to go on was conjecture. She was filled with a sudden desire to tell somebody, and for the space of several steps quickened her pace, intent on finding Zarda. "No," she thought, coming to a halt. Things have changed. Jorad isn't who I thought he was, and the world is not the same place. She would stick to her plan. Her stomach churned with the decision, but she put the thought away. If she didn't take care of herself, who would?
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.